All right, good morning. Today's daf is daf Ayin Hey in Avodah Zarah. We are finishing up the Masechta. Tomorrow we say over the last daf, Masechta Ayin Vav. Today we are going to do a lot in terms of the halachas of kashering. First half of today's daf is going to be dedicated to the kashering of the wine press. Not that much halach lamaisa, but as you'll see a little bit later on this morning, there's one nekuda, one point that comes out that's very halach lamaisa. And then the second half of today's daf, which we're not going to get much to, but second half of today's daf is going to be kashering kalim in general, and that is all halach lamaisa. So we start with our Mishnah. Now we started the Mishnah yesterday. I'm going to go back to the Mishnah. I'm going to go from the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Dalmud Beis. Reason why is because really it's all one big sugya. And it's a little bit complicated, only because there are two opinions and we're talking about three different types of materials. Two opinions, three different materials, that makes for a lot of information. So, start off with and one variable about whether it's pitched or whether it's not pitched. So, just a lot of information. We'll go through it quickly, but hopefully clearly. No promises. We start with the Mishnah Gashal Avishal Zafzal Vikochavim Minagval Vihitaro. So if you have a gas is a wine press. It's a huge piece of machinery. I say that because later on you'll see that becomes important in the discussion of koshering it. It's a huge piece of machinery, and if it's made out of stone, so the stone is not a porous material, nothing goes into the stone per se, but it was laid with a lining of pitch. As I described yesterday, the pitch itself, a little bit of wine is put into the pitch in order to get rid of the smell of the pitch, but it's just a little bit of wine. So in such an apparatus, if it's a stone wine press with a little bit of pitch, so the Mishnah says minagva, thank you so much, minagva, you just simply dry it and that's enough. We'll talk later on this morning about the drying process. Vishal eitz, what if it's made out of wood? Wood is a more porous material. Rabbi Omer Yinagiv, Chachamim Omer Yiklof. Chachamim say, look, the wood is already too porous. You gotta do klipa. You gotta take out the actual pitch lining, and then and only then can you work with it. Yiklof is a zephes. Bishacheres. Now, if it's made out of earthenware, of course, we know is the most porous. Alpha Pishakalafish is a zephes. Ariza Asura. Even with klipa, that's not going to be enough. It's still going to be usur, even after you remove the pitch lining. The Gemara starts off the discussion on Rava. So there are going to be two versions of what Rava said. Dafka, Zafsa, Vadarch, Lo. I'm sorry, Vadarch, Lo. The first version of Rava talks about where you didn't line the wine press, but you just simply, you used it already, you pressed grapes in it. And if you just press grapes in, it's all you need to do is just rinse it out, and that'll be sufficient. Sheet to the Gemara says it seems to be obvious. Zafsatanam, because our Mishnah is talking about where there's a lining of pitch. The Gemara says, no, ma'udetema hua denafilo derachba. Now, it could very well be that this halacha of Niguv, we're going to talk later on this morning, is like this abrasive cleansing. I might have thought Niguv would apply even if I didn't lay down the pitch. And the only reason why the Mishnah talks about lining of pitch is because that's normally how the wine press was manufactured, with the pitch lining, kamash malan, that's the chiddush of Rava. That if it wasn't lined with pitch, you don't need to do this abrasive cleansing. Ika the Amri, according to the second version of Rava, Amar Rava Dafka Zafsa, Aval Darach Valo Sagalai Ben Nigov. Here in the second version of Rava, Rava is describing where two things happened. Number one, you put pitch down, and then afterwards you then pressed grapes into it. So now you are essentially laying down the pitch and squeezing the grapes into the pitch. So here, Nigov is not going to be enough. Pshita, the Gemara says again, I can hear that, I can understand that. Zafsa to none. So because our Mishnah is only talking about where you just lined it with pitch, but it hasn't been used yet. If you pressed grapes into it, Nigov is not going to be enough, because now the pitch lining is saturated with the Yai Nesach, with the Stam Yenam, and therefore just removing the pitch is not going to be enough. You need to do more than that. Good. Story time. The Gemara tells a story. Story is told about a person who goes in front of Rabbi Chiyah. I have a wine press, and I need a kasher. Dache is Aramaic, it means to kasher it. I need somebody to kasher it, the wine press. Amalei l'Rav zil b'hadei. So he says, he gives instructions to Rav. Rav, you go. Go make sure that it's done correctly. V'chazi d'lo metzuchas alai b'medrasha. And also make sure that, you know, it's done correctly and I don't get yelled at in the base medrash. So Rav Chia sends Rav. Rav, by the way, is the nephew of Rabbi Chia. Right? Rav and Rabbi Chia had a very special relationship. Right? When Rav ever referred to his uncle, Rabbi Chia called him Habibi. Right? That was the kind of relationship that they had. So Rabbi Chia sends his nephew Rav and says, look, make sure it's done right. So Rav looked at it, he did an examination, he saw the surface area of the wine press was very smooth. Amar Haivadim and Nigov Sagila. So he says, you know what, Nigov, just do this Nigov, which is again abrasive cleansing of the external, superficial area of the wine press, and that's going to be enough, that's sufficient. Then looked a little bit further and he saw that there were pila. Pila means that there were cracks. There were actual cracks in the right under the superficial area, right under the smooth area. So all you needed to do was just look a little bit deeper and you saw that yes, it did have a nice, clean, smooth finish, but underneath it was cracks. And not only that, because of the Hava Male Chamra. But in the cracks, there were wines in the crack. Amar halo sagila b'nigov ela b'kilof. That's no good. You're going to have to actually take off the entire pitch area, and then and only then is it going to be acceptable. Behind the Damele Chavivi, and that's what my uncle told me, Chazi lo metzucha salai. Meaning that it's not enough just simply to clean out the area, but I actually have to take off the pitch. I'm sorry, lo metzucha salai be'me Joshua. Okay, Tana Rabbanan, we learned in the following braisa. Hagaz v'amachas v'amishapech shov dikochavim. Rebbe Mati b'nigo v'chachamim osrim. Now, as Rashi points out over here, we're talking about earthenware jugs, earthenware material. When it comes to earthenware, it is the most porous material. It gets a full absorption of whatever goes in, even cold. By the way, the entire discussion over here about the wine press is all about cold, right? The wine is not pressed in any type of form of heat. It's all cold. So our kashering procedure, which we're going to be discussing for the first half of today's daf, about a cleansing, an abrasive cleansing. We're going to talk about removing of the pitch. All that is only because it didn't receive a full blia, a full transference of taste, a full infusion of taste, because there was no heat involved. This is all cold. Okay. Earthenware jugs, says the Braisa. So Agaz Ramachas B'Meshapach Shalav D'Kocham Rebbe Matir B'Nigov. So Rebbe says that Nigov, you just need to do this abrasive cleansing and that's enough. The word nigov, by the way, itself means to dry it. And later on you'll see why we use the word nigov for such a procedure. The chachamim osrim. And the chachamim say, no, this is earthenware. That's not going to be enough. Rebbe says that when it comes to kankanim or earthenware jugs, they're usr. Meaning the cleansing there will not work. Tamar says, Rebbe, what did you just do there? You first said that when it comes to earthenware jugs, just do the nigov and that's enough. And then, Rebbe, you talk about these kankanim, which are earthenware jugs, and you said, no, nigov is not going to be enough. So the Gemara says, what just happened over there? Uma hefresh min zeh lazeh, zeh machniso b'kiyum, v'zeh ein machniso b'kiyum. So the Gemara says, look, when it comes to these kankanim, it's long-term use. Since these jugs have wine in them for long periods of time, they're soaked in wine. So even after you pour the wine out, but it's no good because the earthenware jugs have been soaked and saturated with wine for such a long time, and there's no way to kosher it, not with an external, superficial rubbing of the material, but rather it needs to... by the way, what do you need to do over here? Let it sit for 12 months. Let it sit for 12 months. We'll talk about that later on this morning. Vishel etz, vishel even. If it's made out of wood or if it's made out of stone, yinagev. So there, just clean it down. Clean it down with an abrasive cleansing. Vimayum mizufafin. If, however, they're laid down with pitch, asurin, they are going to be forbidden. Now, the Gemara says, wait a second. The hatnan, You just contradicted the Mishnah. We're going through a Braisa right now. The Tana Rabbanan is introducing a Braisa. It just contradicted the Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says that when it comes to Gashel Evan, a stone wine press, even if it's laid with pitch, all you need to do is clean it, and that's it. Just give an abrasive cleansing, and that's it. So Masnisan de lo darach ba brisa de darach ba. The Gemara gives such a simple explanation. There is no contradiction between the Mishnah and the Brisa. The Mishnah is talking about where it was laid with pitch, but it was not used. Good. Then you just clean it, you give it a little cleansing, and you're good to go. In the case of the Brisa, it was laid with pitch and it was used. No good. You have to remove the pitch. Good. Amar.
The Mishnah, it was not used.
Mishnah was talking about a case where it was not used.
Well,
correct.
Why would you need to do anything?
Because Rashi says that in the pitch, they add a little bit of wine in order to get rid of the smell. So that for that, the abrasive cleansing is enough. The niguv is sufficient.
So is that really true that putting in a small bit of wine would take that away?
That's what Rashi says.
I learned more.
Okay. Now, another problem. In the Braisa we just quoted, which is talking about earthenware, it says, according to Rebbe, niguf, just give it a nice scrub, and it's fine. Now the Gemara says, I'm disturbed by that because, go back to our Mishnah. And the Mishnah talks about even in an earthenware jug, even if you were to remove the pitch, it's going to be usur. And in the Mishnah, we didn't identify who said that. And ostensibly, Rashi writes this back in the Mishnah. It's going according to everybody. Rebbe doesn't disagree. So we have a problem. So the Gemara gives again a simple solution. I'm a Rava. Sefer Demasis and Asal Rabbanan. Good. Not a big deal. The end of the Mishnah, although not identified, is only Shitas Chachamim. Rebbe disagrees. Rebbe believes that if it's not been used, even by earthenware, a nice abrasive cleansing is all you need in order to get rid of the issue. Good. Darash Rava. Okay? Before we move on, in the Gemara, we're pretty much done. Meaning, we discussed now three different materials, stone, wood, and earthenware. Each one of them used for the wine press. If it's unused, so for stone, you just give it an abrasive rub, abrasive cleansing, and that's going to be enough. For wood, if it's laid down with pitch, machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim, whether you have to remove the pitch. By cheres, if it's laid with pitch, you for sure have to remove the pitch. And now we've learned that according to Rebbe, give an abrasive cleansing and it's enough. And according to the Chachamim, even then it's not going to be enough. And then the other variable is whether it was laid with pitch or whether it was not laid with pitch. And another variable is whether it was used or whether it was unused. Okay, so that's just a lot of it, tremendous amount of information. It's hard to keep all of it straight, but it's pretty, if you go over it again, you'll see it's pretty laid out. Darash Rava. Nava Arsacho. Rava goes out and he tells the people that when you have this wine press, so you boil it in water, and that will be enough to kasher it. Okay, and here we go. Huge machlokas over here between the Rishonim, and not just the Rishonim, but between two brothers, about what just happened here in the Gemara. Rava goes out and he says to people, look, you have this gas, you have this earthenware wine press, and we've been discussing now, given abrasive scrub, we've been talking about removing the pitch. He says, you know how you want to kasher it? You boil it, right? Arsacho, resicha, in the Gemara means to boil it. Now, look over here. Let's go through this Tosfos, third Tosfos on the page. Major issue, major machlokes, and this is where this discussion about a wine press, which is not so halach lamaisa. I don't know people here in this room who have a wine press in their backyard. I don't think you do. But one thing, however, that comes out over here is this psak of Rava, that if you boil it, it removes all of the wine. What does that mean, you're boiling it? Tosos writes the following, Perish. Higilo hagisios hagadolim. what you would do is you would do Hagala. Now we know, we'll learn it later on this morning, Hagala means taking an item that was infused with taste, put it in a boiling pot of water, and that expunges the prohibited taste out of the utensil. That's Hagala. Good. And what Rav is saying over here is that with your wine press, you bought your wine press from a non-Jew, so you do Hagala. Now, this wine press is a huge apparatus. Okay, I don't have one to demonstrate right now, but it's just, we'll trust each other on this. It is a huge apparatus. So what are you doing over here? You're taking the wine press and you're throwing it into a pot of boiling water? No, you're not. So, Mikan, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Irika Kli Rishon. So Rabbeinu Tam says, so you know what you learn from here? You learn that when you pour hot water, that is like putting it in boiling water. Irui, just the pouring of hot water, right? Here I have it, my hot water. So, and you pour the hot water, that stream, that flow, is like Kli Rishon. So Rabbeinu Tam makes an assumption, the Gemara doesn't say this, that in our Gemara, we are talking about Irui. Because, as I already explained, you're not taking your wine press and you're not putting it into a pot of boiling water. There is no such pot large enough that you can take the wine press and put in boiling water. And meanwhile, Rava says, boil it. So Rabbeinu Tam says, what does that mean? Oh, I'll tell you what it means. It means you're pouring hot water on the wine press. And Rabbeinu Tam says, and you know what you learn from here? That's tantamount to putting it in boiling water.
Is that this?
Wait, just one second. I'm sorry, just give me a little bit of time to flesh this out. Shari Hagasa Gadolu Kveta Sheinichon Lisita Latoch Yoramur Seches Kide Lahagila. Rabbeinu Tam says exactly what I just said. It's too big. You can't put it in a boiling pot of water. Ala Karcha Chayide Iri Kamar. It must be that Rav is talking about Irui. Vahashta Kevin the Havik Kli Rishon. Imkain hani kelim shenestro ayde kli rishon sagle behagala al yedei iri. Rabbeinu Tam therefore says his opinion is he always has strong opinions. It's unbelievable. His opinion is that if you have something that requires hagala, if it needs koshering in a pot, pour hot water on it, pour boiling hot water on it, sufficient enough, and that'll work. Okay, so the chiddush of Rabbeinu Tam for this morning is that iri is like Kli Rishon. Good. Yeah, now.
Wasn't that rejected in the flow? It wasn't rejected by
okay,
the,
good.
The flow and the thing.
Good, very good. That discussion that we had earlier is a discussion about a connection that's made between the flow.
Right.
Meaning if the flow is down here, is it considered like it's touching over there? But that's not talking about degree of heat, and that's not talking about whether or not it can expunge a taste. That discussion was just simply discussion of when I have water here and water down here and there's a flow, is it considered connected?
Right.
Vis-a-vis tumah, vis-a-vis tahara, vis-a-vis yai nesach.
Right.
But here we're talking about degrees of heat. Rabbeinu Tam is of the firm belief that when you pour the water out from the boiling pot, it's still the same degree of heat as the boiling pot itself, with the ability to expunge a taste out of a utensil. Okay.
But Iri would not provide the cloud to bolo kapolo.
So Rabbeinu Tam will tell you, yes, it does. Because even though the water is being poured out,
right,
there's no degree of difference between that water that's being poured out versus the water that was in the pot. So it is Kabbalah Kach Polto. It is getting out the same way it came in. Irui is Kli Rishon. That is Shitas Rabbeinu Tam.
Is it that? Hold by this also?
No. Nobody holds like this. Aval Rashbam Cholek al Rabbeinu Tam. So who argues with Rabbeinu Tam? His brother. Rav Shmuel bar Meir. You know, Rashi had daughters. One of Rashi's daughters married, they both married Talmid Chachamim, but one of them married Rav Meir. And Rav Meir had three boys. And the oldest of the three boys was Shmuel. That turns into Rav Shmuel bar Meir. That's Rashbam. Right, writes a running commentary on Baba Basra, writes a running commentary on the 10th Perek of Pesachim, which we're learning this year, and writes a Perashat Chumash as well. The next son is Yitzchak, that's Rabbeinu Yitzchak Bar Meir, that's the Rivam, comes up in Tosfos every now and then, and then there is the youngest of the family, and that's Rav Yaakov. He got a nickname, he's called Rabbeinu Tam, right? And he is strong, strong-minded, strong-opinionated, right? Okay, good. So the Rashbam argues with Rabbi Natan. V'omer, the iri kekli sheni hu legamre. And Rabbi Natan says, no, when you pour something out, that liquid that comes out, that stream that comes out, is not kli rishon, it's kli sheni. And Rashbam says, "Damash ma'achad degasagale beiri shani yainesech de tashmisha al yedei tzonein." And the Rashbam says, "And what about what's going on over here in the Gemara?" Rashbam says, "You know what's going on over here in the Gemara? We're talking about a wine press. A wine press is never used for hot liquids. So therefore, the infusion of taste into the wine press is never with boiling water. The fact that you can kasher the wine press." With the stream of boiling water, I'm so happy, says the Rashbam. That doesn't indicate anything that Iri Kli Rishon is considered Kli Rishon. Because there's no infused taste of wine trapped inside the wine press. And so the heat over here really is nothing more than just, because it's just Iri, and all it does is provide a superficial cleansing of the surface area, but it is not like putting it into a Kli Rishon.
What
I'm going to do now, right? Good question. Really good question. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to stop over here at Tosos. Tosos does go on to discuss some compromise position that Iri Kli Rishon is Mevashel Kedei Klipa. It does cook, but the superficial area. See the rest of Tosos for that discussion. And vis-a-vis Shabbos, that's how we hold. That it does cook, but only the superficial layer, the surface layer of an item. Okay, so what to walk away with from this? Basic machlokas between Rabbi Natan and the Rashbam. Irui, is it like a Kli Rishon or is it like a Kli Sheni? Rabbi Natan says Irui is like Kli Rishon. His brother, the Rashbam, says Irui is like Kli Sheni. And our Gemara, four words of Gemara, is used as a launching pad for this discussion of what is Irui Kli Rishon considered. Okay, let's go on in the Gemara. Rabbi Kiyava Mishadir, we are on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis. We're about six lines from the bottom of the page. We're starting with the words Rava. Rabbi Kiyava Mishadir Gufa Laharpanya. When Rava would send these earthenware jugs, and he would send them to the officers, through the officers, Sachif Lu Apumai V'chasam Luhu Abir Tzayhu. He sealed them. He gave them a double seal. Now we know that when you send wine needs to be double sealed. He goes even one step further. When you're sending containers that are used to contain wine, to hold wine, they also need the double seal as well. And so therefore when you transport them, in order to ensure that they were not used by a non-Jew for their wine, so therefore they also need a double seal as well. Now, under certain circumstances, you do a type of cleansing which the Mishnah describes as niguv, and then it's enough, and then you can go on. And essentially, that is the niguv process is good for the stone wine press that's never been used, the wood wine press according to Rebbe, and the earthenware wine press according to Rebbe. So it's limited times that you can use this process called niguv. Okay, but it still it works under certain circumstances. What is the process of Negev? Rav Amar B'mayim, Rav B'Bachana Amar B'Efer. So it seems to be a debate, water or ashes. The Gemara immediately qualifies. Rav Amar B'mayim V'lo B'Efer, water but no ashes. Rav B'Bachana Amar B'Efer, B'Efer V'lo B'mayim, right, ashes but no water. So the Gemara says, Ela Rav Amar B'mayim V'hu Adin La'Efer, Rav B'Bachana Amar B'Efer V'hu Adin La'Mayim. No. Everybody agrees, there's no machlokas here. They all agree that niguv is water and ashes. And in fact, there's not even a debate over here. It depends on what you're working with. If the wine press that you're trying to kasher is already wet, it already has moisture on the surface area, so now you can go to the part where the ashes, and you scrub the ashes in, and that gives a nice abrasive cleansing to the surface area of the wine press. And then water to rinse it off. If it's not already moist, in other words, if it's a dry wine press, so then you can't just put ashes on there, putting ashes by itself won't do anything. Then add water, meaning give it a nice wet area. Then put ashes and rub it in. And then, you know, rinse it out. Itmar be rav mishmei de rav amri tarte plas ushmul amar klas dalin. According to Rav, it's two or three application. According to Shmuel, it's three or four application. Give me a moment. I'll explain what this means in just a second. Let me read a little bit more Gemara first. Besura masnu hachi in Surah, that's how they learned it. But Pumbadisa masnu be, in the yeshiva Pumbadisa, they say it over a little bit differently. Be Rav Amri Mishmei de Rav plas Dalet. According to the position of Rav, it's 3-4. Ushmuel Amar Dalet Vehei. And according to Shmuel, it's 4-5. Velo pligi, and there is no debate over here. Mar kachashiv maya basrai, umar lo kachashiv maya basrai. It's a question of whether or not we count the water at the very end that used to rinse everything out. According to the Sura version, you don't count that. According to the Pumbadisa version, you do count that. Now, what's going on over here? 2, 3, 3, 4. 3, 4, 4, 5. What are these numbers over here? So I'm going to say this over very simply and very quickly, because Rashi, as you can see on the side of the page, has a long discussion about what's going on over here. I'm going to simplify the Gemara. Hopefully not oversimplify it. But just give a very simple understanding of what the issue is over here. Again, we're going back to this process of Niguv. Niguv, as we learned, means that I'm going to take ashes and I'm going to rub ashes in order to create some sort of abrasive cleansing on the superficial area. Rashi, now Rashi over here, the reason why Rashi is so long is because he struggles in terms of what the pshat of the Gemara is. He has a pshat that's given over to him by his father. I don't know how many times Rashi actually quotes his father in Shas. But he has a pshat given over to him by his father, and he has a pshat given over to him by his Rebbeim. And Rashi ends up siding with his father, and he says, my father's pshat is the better pshat over here. What is his father's pshat in the Gemara over here? Essentially comes down to this. Rav says you need to do one application of ash. Meaning, put the water in, put the ash in, rub the ash in good, rinse it out, and you're good to go. Shmuel says two applications of ash, right? In other words, do it and repeat, right? Ashes, rub it in, rinse it out. Nachamol, ashes, rub it in, rinse it out. Good. And then Rashi goes on to say, and the only issues over here are 2, 3, 3, 4, 3, 4, 4, 5. It's just, they both, Rav and Shmuel both agree, both maintain that for Rav it's one application, for Shmuel it's two applications. It's just a question of, is it moist already? So according to Rav, good. So then just put in ashes, right? And then rub it in, and then water. Good. That's the two. If it's not wet already, so then wet, ashes, and then wet again. Good. And that's three. And according to Shmuel, because he believes that you need two ash applications, so it's going to be water, ash, water, ash. If it's dry, I'm sorry, that's if it's dry. If it's wet already, ash, water, ash. And in the Pumbadisa version, we add a number because we're counting the last rinse that you've done. Good. That's the pshat according to Rashi's father, and that's what he quotes. Okay, let's go on. Balminei may Rabbi Abba Hani Gurgai da Armai. Right? It's some sort of netting that's used to hold in the grapes during the pressing. How do you kasher them? So Amalei Rabbi Avahu Tanisu Areshayu Gito Vavesabad of Temeim Uvikesh La'asosam Betahara. So here for this answer, we're going to quote it's certainly a brisa. It's a brisa. If your wine press and your beis abadim, your olive press are tamei, and you want to get rid of the all the residual wine and olives in order so that you could now use it in a state of tahara. So, hadapim v'hadashim v'halulavim, different parts of the structure, planks and other components, madichan, you just rinse it off, v'akalim shal netzarim, the netting, V'shalbitz puts menagvan, so there you have to do this astringent rub. V'shal shifa v'shal gemi miyashnan yud beis chodesh. Certain types of materials that are so porous, there's nothing you could do. You have to let it sit for 12 months and allow it to just evaporate, all the infused taste to evaporate after 12 months, over the course of 12 months. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amar Manicha Migas Legas Mibad Labad. And according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you wait till next season. Gemara says, wait a second, that means that's the same thing. And the Gemara immediately interjects right in the middle of the Braisa. Hainu Tanakama, what does that mean? That's the same position as the Tanakama. So, Ika Benayu Chorfi Avaya Feli. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, next season, even if it's not a year later, meaning let's say that this season ended on a late harvest, and next season starts on an early harvest, and you didn't go through the full 12 months, according to Rosh Hashanah and Gamliel, that's fine. That's acceptable. Back to the Braisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer HaRotz LaTaran Miyad Magilan Beroschen Ocholtam B'mei Zeisin. If you want to use it immediately, meaning you don't want to have to wait, so you simply put it into boiling water or boiling olive oil. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Mishum Rabbi Yossi Omer, Menichan Tachat Sinor, Shemeimav Mekachen, O Bemayan, Shemeimav Rodfim, Vekama Ona. And then the Braisa gives another opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, if you put it under very hard running water, that also will expunge the taste of the wine out of the equipment of the wine press. And then the Braisa concludes, everything we've said regarding Ayinesach is true by Taharos. The Gemara immediately corrects the Braisa, because the Braisa is not talking about Ayinesach. The Braisa is talking about Taharos. So Kapalai, so the Gemara says just the opposite. B'taharos kaiminan. We're talking about Taharos. The Braisa is talking about Taharos. Ela kedel shamar b'taharos kachamar b'Ayinesach. Good. So we're going to have to correct that last line of the Braisa. Everything that we just said regarding Taharos is true by Yain Esach. So good. So now we've concluded. Everything that we discussed in the Braisa, in terms of expunging of the wine, and expunging of the oil, in order so that now I could use it in a state of Tahara, the same procedure is good in terms of expunging Yain Esach out of the equipment as well. We said according to Rav Yossi that you put it under hard running water for an ona, and that's sufficient. How much is an ona? Kama ona, Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, O Yom Olayla, 12 hours, Rabbi Chana, She'ina Bar Mila, Rabbi Chana Bar She'ina Amar, Rabbi Baba Chana, Rabbi Yochanan, Chatzi Yom V'chatzi Laila, half a day and half a night, which between you and I, because we're friends, is also 12 hours. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak V'lo Pligi, Habit Kufas Nisa Matishra, Habit Kufas Tamas V'Tevis. And again, there's no debate over here. If it is equinox, and day and night are equal, so that means to say that you can measure it by a day or a night, which is 12 hours. If we're talking about solstice, where day and night are not equal, and you want to know how to get to 12 hours, half the night plus half the day, and that'll get you to 12 hours. If you don't understand that, come speak to me later. I'll give you a little equinox solstice briefing. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Hani Rafki Darmai Damazya, if you have other types of bags that hold in the wine. The first one that we're describing is netting made by human hair. Alright. Why not? So Madichan. So there if you want to kasher it, so just rinse it underwater and that's sufficient. The Amra. If it's made out of wool, and the wool is a little bit more absorbent, min nagvan. So there you do your niguv, you do an abrasive rubbing of the wool. The kisna, if it's made out of linen, that is very absorbent, and therefore mi yashnan, nothing else to do, let it sit for 12 months, and let it evaporate. The make sure that if these nettings have any knots in them, you have to untie the knots, because otherwise you'll have pockets in the knots which will be holding the Yain Esach, so you got to undo the knots before you let it dry. You have these baskets, these wickers of the non-Jews. If it is made out of palm, so palm fibers, so you rinse it off, top of the next amud. Ditzavta, if it's made out of a gemi, well, I was going to say rubber, but that's not rubber. Type of plant. So, min, right? Modern Hebrew gemi is rubber?
Flax?
No.
Regress, isn't it?
No, flax is coming up. Okay, regress. Ditzavta linagvan, the kisna, and if it's made out of linen, miyashnan, fine, let it sit for 12 months. These kachur shari lehu, and again, same thing. If it has knots in it, you have to undo the knots. Itmar. Amar shahoshiyadu legas, v'naga be'eshkolis. You have an amar aretz. He is tamei. He puts his hand into the wine press. He touches grapes. These are full grapes, not yet pressed. So, Rebbe v'Rebbe Chia Chanamar Eshkol v'chol tzvi v'asav tamein v'chol agaz kula ta'aros v'chanamar kol agaz kulo nami tamea. The first opinion over here is that the grape that he actually touched is tamein. Good. He's an avatumah. He touched the grape. The grape is the rishon l'tumah. The grape is touching a grape next to it. The next grape next to it is the sheni l'tumah. Ad kan. Stop over here, because in the world of chulin, there's no more tumah after that. The second opinion is that the entire apparatus, not only the grapes, but the wine press is also tamei as well. Difficult to understand why that should be. That's the second opinion. The Gemara compares this to a Mishnah in Taharos, where the Mishnah writes as follows. If a sheretz touches an olive press, the only thing that becomes tamei is the place that it actually makes contact with. However, if it, however, there is liquid running through the olive press, so the olive press is tamei because the liquid transfers the tumah throughout. Gemara gives such a simple differentiation between the two cases. Here, they are full grapes. There seems to be, from the Gemara's answer over here, there seems to be no liquid running through the wine press. They are just grapes. Consequently, when he touches the grape becomes tamei, a rishon l'tumah. The next grape next to it is a sheni l'tumah and ad kan, and stop over there. As opposed to the Mishnah Taharos, where it is saturated with liquid, and therefore the tumah goes throughout the entire olive press. And the Gemara says that's in fact the halachic conclusion. The grape and its next grape are tamei. The rest of the grapes and the entire apparatus is in fact tahor. Good. Finish the discussion of the wine press in terms of how to kosher it. Big machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim in terms of if it's laid down with pitch. Major machlokus between Rav and Shmuel in terms of how you actually do niguv. One application of ash or two applications of ash. A lot of subsequent discussion about the different accoutrements to the wine press and how they're exactly koshered. And a more halach lamaisa discussion found in Tosfos about how to view Irui, whether Irui is considered Kli Rishon or Irui is considered Kli Sheni. We discussed that already as well. Good. We're going to start now the last Mishnah of the Masechta. And this is it. This is the one of the more basic discussions, this next blot of Gemara, even though it's the last blot of Avodah Zarah, but this blot is dedicated to discussion of Kasher and Kalim. We so far have been discussing it, but only in the context of Yain Esach, because we're learning Masechta Avodah Zarah, and the issue is Yain Esach. And that's talking about in the case of a wine press, but as we already discussed earlier this morning, that's bitsonin, that's used bekold. Now we're going to discuss how to expunge non-kosher absorbed taste that went in through heat. And so here, the Mishnah gives very clear instruction. So the Mishnah says, if it requires tefillah in the mikvah, you should tova in the mikvah. Give me a moment, I will come back to that. I'm sorry. if you need to kasher by putting it to boiling water, so kasher it by putting it to boiling water. Lilavein ba'or, yilavein ba'or, if it was used in fire, so the way to kasher it is through fire. Hashpud v'aksala milavnin ba'or, the spit, different types of spits, you have to kasher by fire. Hasak and shafa v'hita ora, and when it comes to the knife, so you sharpen it, is a better word, but you sharpen it on a stone, and that would be enough, and that will kasher the knife. Okay. The first part of the Mishnah talks about toveling. What does the first part of the Mishnah mean? So Rashi on the Mishnah writes, Eshadak alahat b'klamer kli aroi lehitayah b'tfilah, so Rashi on the Mishnah writes that we're talking about toveling in the mikvah. Okay. There are two different aspects of what you need to do when you get a kli from a non-Jew. One aspect is getting out the prohibited taste from the kli. And if it never was used with heat, so then you don't need to kosher it. It's fine. If it was used with heat, so it depends. If the taste was infused through boiling water, so then hagala, get it out through boiling water. If the taste was infused through fire, direct fire, so the way to kosher is with direct fire. Good. In addition to that, there's another requirement called tefillah b'mikvah. You need to tovel it in the mikvah. This is totally unrelated to koshering it. This is not expunging the prohibited taste. This is just a requirement of toveling in the mikvah. Now, is it mentioned anywhere explicitly in Chumash that you have to tovel kalim in a mikvah? Okay, so debatable, right? Unfortunately, not a simple answer to a very simple question. Subject to a debate whether or not the Torah explicitly mentions this tefillah b'mikvah. Okay, hopefully, if I have time, I'll go over it in just a moment. Let's start with the Gemara because the Gemara goes right into this discussion of toveling in a mikvah. The Gemara over here doesn't say it, but it's brought down by many different people. And I think it's brought down by Yerushalmi as well. I think it all goes back to Yerushalmi, that this idea of toveling kalim in a mikvah, which is not kashering, is similar to the idea of when somebody wants to become Jewish, they convert, which requires them to tovel in the mikvah. So the kli, although it's an inanimate object, obviously, but nevertheless, in a similar vein, also needs to go through quote-unquote a conversion process. And therefore, it is toveled in a mikvah. Tana, we learned in the following brights. V'kulin tzrichin tevila bar b'imsa. Toveling in a kosher mikvah. Minani miliyama ravadama krakol davar sheyefo b'eish tavir b'eish v'taher. The word v'taher in the pasuk is extra. Hostiv lecha kosuf tahara acheres. It's an additional tahara. Tini bar kapar mitoch shenema b'mei nida shomayani shetzer chazash li shushvi. Tamoama ach the regarding the sprinkling of the paradum, it says ach, chala. Imkem ma'atam alam rabbe meini da, ma'im shenid tovels behem, havi omer arba'im sa'a. You need a mikvah of arba'im sa'a, and we learn it from that pasuk as well. Itzrich lemichte v'tahir, v'itzrich lemichte b'meini da, ikatsa v'tahir, havamina v'tahir koldu. Kasa rachmana b'meini da, v'ikasa rachmana b'meini da, havamina ha'er shemesh kinida. Kasa rachmana v'tahir la'alter. So we learn out two things. First of all, from the word v'tahir, we learn out that it becomes usable immediately. Unlike a nida, a woman who's finishing up her nida, where she tovels in the mikvah, but that's not enough, she needs Harei Shemesh. She needs to wait until nightfall. For us, for the kalim, you could use it immediately. That's what we get out from v'tahir. What do we get out from the words v'mei nida? We get out the idea that he needs a kosher mikvah 40 sa'ah. A little bit more for this morning. I'm Rav Nachman. I'm a Rav Aravu. I feel came chadashim emashma. New kalim that you buy from a non-Jew, that you get from a non-Jew, they also require tefillah. They are tefillah hachi by tefillah. How do I know that? Because look, when I have kalim that I got from a non-Jew that were used, and I kasher them, you know what kashering does? It basically makes them new. So, and still I need to tovel them in a mikvah. So, It stands to reason that even if I get them new from the non-Jew, never been used before, so I still have to kasha. I still have to tovel them in a mikvah. Maskev lo Rav Sheshes v'yachi afilu zuza the sarvala. So the Gemara says, really, that's true. Even scissors that I get from a non-Jew, I have to kasha them in the. I have to put them in a. I keep saying kasha. I have to tovel them in the mikvah. So I'm like klisa uda more in the parsha. The Gemara says no, because if you look at the parsha, you look in parsha's matos, and you look at what we got from Kli Midyan. Eating utensils, and only eating utensils need to be into a mikvah. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, Lo Shanu Ela Belakuchen Uchamais Veshaya, Avo Sheulin Lo. Another halacha: if I go to my non-Jewish neighbor and I borrow a utensil, I don't. If I'm just for a limited usage, I don't need to tovel them in a mikvah. By the way, if I borrow them, keep them. Huh?
They must be new.
Either they're new, or I kosher them.
Then you don't,
but I don't have to tovel them in the mikvah in order to use them if I'm borrowing them. Fair's Gemara? Okay, good. Good. All right, good. We'll stop over here. More about toveling in the mikvah tomorrow. A little bit about where we get this halacha from, and God willing, we'll finish the Masechta tomorrow. Rabbi Chananya ben Akash Amar Zakash Baruch Hu Zakash Zeh Oficha Achir Ben Torah Mitzvah Shenemar Anai Chafetz Man Sikoy Yagdut Rav Yadir.